Unencumbered by political correctness, undeterred in her mission to spread the truth, unafraid to be a true conservative, she's unapologetic, uncompromising, unwavering, and an undeniably powerful voice when we need it most. This is Rose Unplugged.
Please help keep this podcast going. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ROSE. Right now, $25 extravaganza. With promo code ROSE, you get free shipping on top of that. Thank you so much for your support. MyPillow.com, promo code ROSE.
This is Ashley Klingensmith with Americans for Prosperity. Bidenomics has been a complete disaster, and everyone knows it. Politicians responsible for Bidenomics, like Senator Bob Casey, want to blame everyone but themselves. Casey voted for all of Joe Biden's $5.5 trillion in new spending. He wants you to believe grocery stores are the real problem. We're fighting back. We are building a movement to reverse Bidenomics and its broken promises, and that movement is called Prosperity is Possible. Prosperity is Possible advocates policies that break down the government barriers that are holding people back. Join the movement for a stronger economy. Visit prosperityispossible.com. Prosperityispossible.com.
Welcome to this episode of Rose Unplugged, and I'm really excited to have with me someone that, first of all, and most importantly, has been a friend of mine for many, many years, even before he began to serve the 14th District in Congress, and he is Congressman Guy Rushenthaler from Pennsylvania. Guy, it is so great to have you on the program today.
Rose, it's always good to be on. I love coming on. I've been a fan of yours for years. You're a constituent, you're a friend, so always good to be on with you, and thanks for having me.
I appreciate that so much. And, you know, I ran into you over the weekend, and we started talking about a few of the things that are going on in Washington, D.C., which, of course, affect all of us throughout the country. One of those things that a lot of people are a bit upset about, and perhaps you can put some more light on it and help us to understand, we know that last week the House voted to reauthorize FISA. The vote was 273 to 147. Now, there was a push from Republicans, even Speaker Johnson in the beginning, to amend Section 702 of FISA. That's the one that allows intelligence agencies to gather data on foreigners living abroad. But it does affect U.S. citizens, and I'm going to have you explain exactly how and why. And if I remember correctly, right before the new year, we extended that period to amend if we wanted to and to pass this legislation. So what happened? What people were upset then when we put a extension on and pushed it to where we are right now to a vote. Why did we delay that? And secondly, what does this mean to Americans?
Yeah, so I'll go back and just go from the start. So we have FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and that gives the government the ability to spy on foreign actors that are overseas. There were abuses, to say the least, with FISA. Remember Carter Page, you had Crossfire Hurricane. That's where the Hillary Clinton campaign took Christopher Steele's dossier, which was a product, which is a product of Fusion GPS, a Democratic campaign firm. And they went to FISA court and they got a warrant to what? Spy on the Trump campaign. That was clearly an abuse. But the other abuse they have is right now, if you're an American citizen and you're corresponding with a foreign national overseas, FISA does not need a warrant to spy on those correspondences or do what's called running a query, basically searching for your name in the data they've collected. That's a problem. So leading up, FISA needs to be reauthorized every few years. It was set to expire, I believe, in December of last year. We had two competing bills. One came from the House Intel Committee and the other came from the Judiciary Committee. I'm much more partial to the Judiciary Committee bill, but there was disagreements over which one was going to run. So we decided to punt and say we're going to do a clean reauthorization until April 19th. Okay. So fast forward, now we're in April. So now the product we had was a FISA reauthorization that contained a series of reforms, statutory penalties and jail time for people that abuse FISA, like what you saw with Crossfire Hurricane and Carter Page, et cetera. But the one sticking point that we had was over a warrant requirement that require the intel community have a warrant if they're on a U.S. citizen, if they're going to query that U.S. citizen. We put that up for a vote, and that was tied 211-211, meaning the amendment didn't get included. I'm very disappointed in that. I was the only member of the top five leadership, with the exception of Tom Emmer. He and I were the only two in leadership that voted for that amendment. You had more of your libertarian Republicans, like your Thomas Massie, your Jim Jordans, your Chip Roys, all supporting this amendment, and it was tied. The only saving grace here is that the FISA reauthorization is only for 2 years, meaning we're going to get another bite at this apple. Originally, the intel community wanted it to extend for 5 years. Why 5 years? It's because they know that President Trump is going to win re-election, and they don't want President Trump to come in and gut the program. So by us fighting and keeping it 2 years, that'll mean that we'll likely have a Senate that's in control of, by the Republicans. We'll have a House, hopefully with a larger majority, and President Trump in office. And then 2 years from now, we can come and we can do substantial reforms to get the intel community in check and stop all these abuses. So that's the saving grace. But yeah, I'm absolutely disappointed in the fact that we couldn't pass an amendment to require a warrant to run a query in a database on a U.S. citizen. Our founding fathers would be horrified by that decision.
Congressman, I'm thinking, though, even 2 years, there are a lot of people that feel like a lot of damage could be done in 2 years, or a lot of things could be abused. Situations could be abused in 2 years. And I we're just a little confused about Speaker Johnson, too. Of course, he agrees on the necessity of the uses of FISA. And I get that in terms of, you know, collecting data on terrorists and how we stop terrorist plots. I get all of that. But again, when it comes down to how it imposes on our privacy, on American citizens' privacy, there's a bit of concern, and I feel like a disconnect almost with Speaker Johnson.
Speaker Johnson is in a tough spot. He inherited a bad position. He's in a tough spot, but I think that it's important to stay true to your conservative values, and one of the conservative values that we should stay true to is making sure that we're protecting our constitutional rights, particularly those rights in the Bill of Rights, such as the Fourth Amendment protections. I would like to see us come back in 2 years and take another bite of this apple and try to see if we can get that amendment through. As far as abuses that can take place in the next 2 years, absolutely, there's abuses that can take place in the next 2 years. We also have to realize that we have Joe Biden in the White House. We have a Senate controlled by Democrats. So this 2-year reauthorization plus some of the penalties for people that abuse the system, we're going to have to accept that for good enough for now, just because it's a political reality. And then 2 years, when we come back to this, we've got to find our backbone, and we've actually got to get in the real reforms that are going to bring these intelligence agencies to heel.
Well, 2 years is certainly better than five. And when we talk about backbone, there's something else, too, I think the American people want to see is a little more unity in the Republican Party. I mean, again, we had someone want to remove or introduce a motion to vacate Speaker Johnson as the House Speaker. And I think a lot of us look at that and say, can we just get on with the business of the day? Because there is much to get on with. And we've got a presidential election coming up. And I just feel like the Democrats do that one thing better than we do, and that's unity in the party. Because we may have disagreements, but, you know, a house divided against itself will not stand. That's one of the biggest problems that we have right now.
We're a different party than the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party is all about top-down leadership structure. And what you had with Nancy Pelosi is you had Nancy Pelosi and her senior staff in a back room deciding every single important decision, deciding every single amendment, and then cramming that down on the Democrats. And the Democrats, because of who they are, they accept that because they're more likely to fall for like authoritarian strongman kind of tactics and fall in line behind a strong leader. Republicans don't have that problem. We're the party of rugged individualism. We're the party of individual rights. And think about the ideological gulf between someone like a Western libertarian, like a Thomas Massie, and somebody like a New York Republican, like a Mike Lawler, or a Southern evangelical and a Rust Belt conservative. There is a huge ideological spread in our party. The Democrats don't have that. If you look at the voting record, for example, between going to a Pittsburgh example, the differential between a Chris DeLuzio and a Summer Lee, you know, Chris DeLuzio might say that he's a Rust Belt conservative or a Blue Dog Democrat. Summer Lee obviously says she's a progressive, but their voting record is close to 100% as it can get, which shows you that their differences are much more on just like tone and messaging and not on their vote recs. Right. That's not the case with Republicans. We have a wide, something like, I think 74% might be like our average with voting totals, which is actually a pretty big spread. So I think that our ideological diversity, actually, Democrats are always saying diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. They're talking about the superficiality of skin color and ethnicity. When I say diversity is our strength, I'm talking about our ideological spread and the fact that you have competing ideas coming together to produce a product for all of the American people. I actually think it's a good thing. It's messy. It's sloppy. It looks bad. No question. But I'd rather take our bottom-up leadership style over the Democrat strongman style of Nancy Pelosi dictating from on high.
Thank you for that perspective. It makes me really appreciate that, the diversity of our party, which is, in fact, a very diverse party. So thank you for that. One of the things that you and I talked about, too, and by the way, we're going to get to Iran and Israel, but I want to talk about the districts right now. How do you foresee our districts changing, what they look like at some point, because we see a number of immigrants coming into certain areas only throughout the United States, which are going to greatly impact, I would think, what those districts look like, and then perhaps even down the road, how we divvy them up again. Can you explain that to us and how this might affect us and the Republicans and conservatives in the future elections?
Sure. So you're seeing a lot of illegal immigration, and that's, I know I'm stating the obvious, but the issue with the illegal immigration is that Democrats, they think that these individuals are going to vote Democratic for generations. They're playing with fire because actually right now there's some polls that have Republicans pulling at 55% with Hispanic voters. And I can guarantee you, if you're a Venezuelan that's fleeing communism, or you're a Cuban fleeing communism, you're going to vote Republican. We see that with the Cuban population in Miami, Florida, for example, and frankly, all through Florida. Mm-hmm. But another thing they're doing is they want to count illegal immigrants for the census. And when they do that, it's going to greatly expand the electoral power of the Democratic Party. Because if you're just looking at people that are U.S. citizens, probably won't change that much. But if you start cramming illegal immigrants into certain areas, then you're going to give a lot more representation in Congress to those districts, and you're also going to skew the electoral vote. And if you say, well, there's no way there's enough illegal immigrants to skew electoral power, if you add up all the illegal immigrants that have come in over the last few years, that the total population of just that group is greater than 36 separate states. So we're talking about a staggering amount. If you had all the illegal immigrants, they'd have the population representation of, I think, Virginia. They probably have like 7 or 9 electoral votes, and that number continues to grow. So this is enough they could sway future elections, certainly presidential elections. So we need to make sure that for the census purposes, only U.S. citizens are counted, and that you can ask on the census form, are you an immigrant or are you a U.S. citizen? When our founders had a census, that census was for representation of U.S. citizens. It was not for people that were coming over here from foreign countries. That was not an accurate read of the law. And I hope that we get this changed legislatively.
That's a good point. And it should be of concern to everyone. Guy, on the subject of immigrants, there are a lot of young people that tell me, because this is all new to them. Let's be honest. You know, when we were growing up, there wasn't an influx. This wasn't an issue, the border and immigrants that were coming into this country and the great numbers that they are. And so I will hear from a lot of young people who are unfamiliar with the past, tell me, but listen, these people are coming from places that are horrifying and terrible living conditions, and we should be embracing them and helping them because they want a better life. What would be your answer to that? Because I am telling you, a lot of young people feel that way.
Yeah, look, Churchill had that famous quote that if you're under 20 or under, I forget the exact cutoff, but if you're young and not a liberal, you don't have a heart. But if you're old and not a conservative, you don't have a brain. And you see that play out. So I'm not shocked that young kids are saying that they need to feel sorry for these illegal immigrants. I feel sorry for the illegal immigrants. But the irony is that if you have humanitarian compassion it is that you have a secure border and you're having illegal immigrants come through legally, because it's not fair to the legal immigrants to have illegal immigrants just walking across the country. And I've had people tell me, look, it took me 7 years to work through getting a green card, getting citizenship, and thousands of dollars. I should have just walked across the southern border and I would have saved a lot of time and hassle. But also, these people are getting victimized on the trek up.
Yes.
There's a lot of abuse, rape, assault. They're exploiting the illegal immigrants when they get here, because they'll say, okay, pay me $7,000 and I'll get you the United States and you'll pay me back, kind of like an indentured servant. But you pay them their $7,000 back and they say, you know what, it's actually $10,000, and if you don't give it to me, I'm going to kill your grandmother that's back in your village. Okay. So, and we know that's happening.
Yes.
People are being exploited over and over. And then corporate America, which has totally gone woke, by the way, they want the cheap labor because they want to deflate the wages of blue collar workers, legal American citizens. So if unions were actually doing their jobs, the unions would be against illegal immigration. That's why you see trade unions, for example, steam fitters, laborers, carpenters, very, very big, particularly in Western Pennsylvania. They want E-Verify, and I'm a big proponent of E-Verify, because it would force corporations to not hire illegal immigrants because they'd have to verify your status. And then it would raise the wages of blue collar workers, whatever ethnicity they are. But the wages right now are being suppressed for blue collar voters because these corporations are allowed to exploit the illegal immigrants. And so if you really have compassion for illegal immigrants, you would want to shut down illegal immigration and stop these corporations and stop the Democratic Party from taking advantage of them, and certainly stop the drug cartels from treating them like indentured servants.
We've created a humanitarian crisis by not controlling the borders. We created that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is all on the left, and really, to a large extent, corporate America for not pushing back on this.
Amen to that. Also, one of the things you and I talked about, and we'll get to that at the very end of this conversation, are there a couple of things that happened at Easter time at the White House, and then some other related issues that I do want to address, because I don't think a lot of people know some of the background there. So we'll get to that, but we have to talk about Iran and Israel right now. Israel has been saying now that they are vowing to exact a price from Iran after this large-scale drone attack and missile attack that we saw recently. Also, at the same time, we have world leaders in France, I think, just joined the other Western world leaders who are urging Israel not to retaliate for that drone and missile attack. I mean, my God, am I crazy, guy? Or a country is being attacked by another country and we're urging them to restrain themselves and not retaliate?
It's at its core anti-Semitic, but I'll get there. But let me just say this, the aggression you're seeing from Iran, from Hamas and Hezbollah, the Houthis, for example, it is directly attributable to the weakness of the Biden administration.
Yes.
And also them trying to appease Iran. And this all goes back to Obama getting a Nobel Peace Prize for basically getting elected. And Obama spent 8 years trying to justify that peace prize by getting a nuclear deal with Iran at the cost of not only the United States and our interests, but the interests of our Arab allies like Saudi Arabia and our democratic allies like Israel. And so now you have, in essence, the third term of the Obama administration. Biden releases literally billions of dollars to free hostages in Iran, which that money goes directly to fueling Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthi rebels. And then almost immediately after that, you see Gaza attack southern Israel. You see Hezbollah making a lot of noise and the Houthi rebels shutting down commerce in the Red Sea. Again, directly attributable to the weakness and the missteps of the Biden administration. Then to show the irony here is that the way the left treats Israel and how they treat Ukraine, they say that we need to defend Ukraine. We need to send unlimited aid to Ukraine because they're a democracy under attack from authoritarian regime. They're correct in that, but they also will not apply that same logic to Israel. Israel is a functioning democracy. It's far more democratic than Ukraine is, and it's fighting an authoritarian regime in Hamas. And yet the same people that are saying that Zelensky gets a blank check, there's no off-ramps. If you talk about an off-ramp or a peace settlement, you're a stooge for Putin. They're the same ones trying to dictate to the Israeli government that they have a ceasefire, that they condition aid going into Israel, that there has to be a peace settlement. after a ceasefire. It's completely hypocritical, and it's driven by the fact that they're anti-Zionist, they're anti-Semitic, and they're totally ignorant of the history of the Jewish people. It's absolutely imperative that we have a majority Jewish state for which the Jews can have as their own nation, and that is called Zionism, and too many people forget about why we need it. But October 7th should remind the world why we need a majority Jewish state in Israel, and it's because there's anti-Semitism in the world. The people that committed the attacks on October 7th did it because they were anti-Semitic, and you need to have a state that can defend against those anti-Semitic attacks. And we should not hamstring our ally Israel as they fight Hamas, oh, by the way, our enemy as well, because Hamas views Israel as the little Satan. They view the United States as the big Satan. So it's much better that the Israelis are over there decimating Hamas than Hamas is attacking Americans on our soil. I don't want to minimize the attack of October 7th. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that the Israelis are confronting a common enemy. And if they're able to take a pound of flesh from Israel and get concessions from Israel, the next step will be launching attacks on the American homeland. That takes me back to the border. We have caught something like 100 some people on the terrorist watch list, which begs the question, how many people have we not caught on the terrorist watch list? If you think that there aren't sleeper cells of Hamas and ISIS and other terrorist organizations here in the United States, you're incredibly naive. They could call for an international day of jihad. They could have sleeper cells. They could have lone wolves over here that attacks, much like you saw the attack in Russia not too long ago where they went into that theater. So that's why it's so important that we put pressure on Hamas and we allow Israel to destroy Hamas once and for all.
You know, one thing you said over and over again, and I mean, this is so clearly the reason why Iran feels emboldened right now, and that anyone could feel emboldened, any country that hates America, hates democracy, hates Israel. And that is because they know that Biden is weak. But let me tell you this, too. I almost feel as though they are taking advantage because I think they don't know how this election is going to play out in November. And they look at this time between now and November as perhaps the only window of opportunity they may have, at least for another 4 years. So they're not going to take a chance. And I think that they're actually responding to the fact that they know right now is the best time for them to get away with what they can get away with.
There's certainly truth to that. I mean, there's a reason why Putin went into Georgia and Crimea during the Obama administration. During the Trump administration, he did not make any movements. And then as soon as Biden came in, he took another run at Ukraine. There's a reason for that. And even though the Democrats try to say like the Republican Party is pro-Russia, which is completely ridiculous, it's under Democratic administrations where Russia makes moves and they're not held accountable for it. We could talk about Ukraine, but Biden was very weak on Russia. Initially in that war, we should have been giving the Ukrainians the MiGs they wanted, anti-aircraft battery. We should have been jamming the aircraft of the Russians with electronic warfare. We refused to do it, and we gave Russia this huge advantage where now it's going to be incredibly difficult for them to for the Ukrainians to repel the Russian attacks and unfreeze those lines. But talking about looking ahead to the next election, you're going to see possibly China get aggressive in the Taiwan Straits, because if they think that if they think Trump is coming in, and they'll be more likely to move on Taiwan, knowing that Joe Biden would probably have a weak response, but Trump would defend Taiwan.
What a mess we find ourselves in, isn't it? And I'll tell you something else, too. You mentioned we don't know who's coming across the border. There could be terrorists, people that mean harm to America. And then you look just, I don't know, a little over a week ago in Michigan, it was in Dearborn, I think, there was a protest, and they were chanting death to America. You said before, you know, they are the little Satan. We're the big Satan.
Yeah. And we also have a problem. That's with the American left, where if you look at these Ivy League colleges and universities, that a lot of this anti-West and a lot of this anti-American sentiment is coming from. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's completely acceptable to tolerate these kind of protests where they're yelling death to America, basically pro-Hamas rallies. You see that take place in London where they have large parades and the police do nothing to stop it. So if you in London or Ireland, in Great Britain or Ireland, if you misgender a person, that is viewed as a hate speech, and you can be jailed for that. But if you yell from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, which is, by the way, a calling of genocide. Or if you say, you know, blessed be the martyrs on October 8th in reference to the terrorists that died on the in the October 7th attack, then that is completely acceptable. It's because the leftists in this country are anti-Western, they're anti-American, and they'll make these strange bedfellows where they'll sympathize with the terrorists over our Democratic allies.
But Guy, that's what confuses me. They've got to see that there's a bigger picture here. It's not just that, not just that they hate the West. They live here. And do they really not understand the complications that could come from this later on down the road? I mean, I get that you may have a sentiment against the U.S. that even if many are serving in the House right now that perhaps don't care so much about us or they have sympathies for others. But can they not see that this is the land in which they live? And at some point, this is going to affect them greatly as well. Do they just not take their thinking process that far down the road, or do they not believe that that's a possibility?
Yeah, it's a mix of both. There's some that are just totally clueless, and there's some that know what they're doing. And this is Lenin. This is Marxist Leninism at its finest, where basically Lenin had said there's a vanguard, and that's the people that know what's going on. Those would be the people that are actually calling the shots. And then he described the others as useful idiots. So the useful idiots would be that the kids that are going into, for example, the Cannon building protesting for Gaza. They have zero idea what's going on.
Yeah, you're right about that.
You have another group that actually knows what's going on. That's the problem. But we've got to realize that we have a generation of American kids that have been educated by these colleges and universities. They're radically to the left. They don't care about freedom. And the same people that will yell about so-called perceived transgressions on a college campus, they're the first ones that will look the other way when Hamas goes into Israel and rapes women, beheads babies, throws grenades into families and bunkers. They'll totally be okay with that because they're so sucked into this anti-Western philosophy.
That's an excellent point. One other thing I wanted to talk about, because you and I had this discussion a few days ago, and a lot of people have said, you know, why are Republicans upset about the Trans Day of Visibility and it fell on Easter? And some will say, well, you know what? That Day of Visibility has always been on that date. So, you know, Biden didn't set Transgender Day. So, but there is a distinction to be made, isn't there? There is something, this goes a little beyond that this year.
Yeah. When I hear that, I just think fake news. It's absolutely a false narrative. Here's what happened. So, there's always been, since the Obama administration, this day has been designated as the day of trans rights or trans awareness. Okay, it's the 31st of March. However, there's never been an executive order to actually recognize it as such. So the Biden administration turns around and they decide that on the same day it coincides with Easter, they're going to do the Transgender Awareness Day. Don't be mistaken. They proactively did that. They knew full well what they were doing, and they were doing it because they wanted to undermine and mock Christianity. Then the news media, the legacy media, turns around and says, oh, it's always been on this day. It's not a big day. It's Republicans pouncing. Republicans are pouncing. That is fake news, because what they're not telling you is they're not telling you that there's never been an executive order to actually recognize that day as the day of trans rights. They also don't tell you this. Every year there's an Easter egg hunt at the White House, and usually the kids will compete in an essay contest where they write essays about Easter. The Biden administration told the kids, and these are the kids of our service members, by the way, men and women that are in the military risking their lives, those kids were told they could not write any Christian essays. They had to be secular essays. So they turn around, they do that. Could you imagine them doing that on saying, like on a celebration of Ramadan, saying you can't have anything that celebrates the Muslim faith? No, absolutely not. Could you imagine if the trans day would have fallen on the first or last day of Ramadan? They would have just not celebrated the trans day, or they didn't do the order, but they felt emboldened to do it because they are actually waging a cold war basically against Christianity. They are threatened by the Christian faith because they don't want people to worship Judeo-Christian values or our faith, because they want to replace those values with those of the leftist regime. And so Christianity is a big threat to them.
Wow. That's astounding to me. It really is. Congressman Guy Reschenthaler, 14th District in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us today. You have really shed some light on a lot of issues that a lot of us are talking about right now. So thank you for that.
Hey, thanks, Rose. Take care. Always good to come on.
Please support Americans for Prosperity. They support this show.